Good morning, CHD. Welcome to Pediatric Perspectives, where we are looking at children's health challenges from a different perspective, one that includes critical thinking and is not afraid to give you the honest truth. I'm your host, Dr. Paul. My guest today is none other than Bob Sears. This is like a dream of mine to have you just one-on-one talk about our journeys. You and I have kind of in parallel really gone through an experience with the whole vaccine question. And I thought to share with the public our respective journeys might be helpful because everybody's on a journey, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This has kind of been a journey of my entire career, starting actually way back in the second year of medical school. So yeah, I've spent my whole pediatric career on this journey through the vaccine, I don't know, what do you call it? Controversy, conversation, debate, decision.
Right. I think we've both experienced something where because we were able to listen to our patients, and of course we had kids of our own, so that helps open our eyes. We went from what we were taught in medical school, which was here's the CDC schedule, the AAP endorsed it. That's the American Academy of Pediatrics that we've both been members of for a long time. I'm no longer.
Me neither.
There you go. There's good reason for that, too. And then because we listened and we honor informed consent, that process of, you know, sharing everything we know, risks, benefits, alternatives, but allowing the parent or in this, the patient who's the parent or the parents making decisions for their child, that option of exercising their right to do whatever they feel is best for their child. And sadly, a lot of our peers don't do that, right?
All right. You know, the CDC was the ivory tower of information on vaccines and infectious diseases. You know, I was trained to not question them. But I will say I was trained, Paul, to question pharma, right? I was trained to question any pharma-funded research. And that's really what got me on this road. Not so much that I thought the CDC was not an organization I should no longer trust, but it's more directly pharma. You know, and then of course, I'm sure I'll get into this, but then you realize pharma and the CDC and our government and mainstream medicine are all in the same boat. You know, they're all holding hands, funding each other and guiding each other and influencing each other's policies.
Yeah. No, I shared that same experience when I was in medical school. I mean, the CDC was doing some good work. They were really documenting what was going on with infectious diseases around the world, and they were our go-to resource, which to some extent they still are if we want statistics on certain things. But boy, did it become apparent over the years that they were completely captured, especially this last decade. But it's probably been going on longer than I realized.
Right. And evidence of that, you can actually find this online. If you look at what's called the SPIDER group of doctors, you know, a group of CDC scientists essentially blew the whistle saying that the CDC has been bought. You know, they're now being influenced by industry. They're being funded by industry, and we are no longer an altruistic, objective organization when it comes to information and policies that we make. And you might help me figure out, you remember what SPIDER stands for. It's like scientists preserving integrity and whatever D is in research. You know, if you Google search that and the CDC, you'll actually come up with the letter that they wrote to the director of the CDC and that they published online saying, we are essentially calling foul in how the CDC is making their policies.
Yeah. Well, and you and I, way back when we were waking up to what was going on, witnessed what happened at the CDC with whistleblower William Thompson.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So in our main journal, so pediatricians read one journal, it's called Pediatrics. I mean, maybe you read some others, but that was our main journal. And they published this article that supposedly the way it was written was there was no link between MMR and autism. And it was a decade later, pretty much, when William Thompson came forward. He couldn't bear the fact that he was living with information he knew that they were instructed to destroy some data so that they could show the opposite of what that article showed. And what they actually showed was over 300% increase in autism in African-American boys. The documentary Vax sort of outlined that information. But to this day, if you go to the CDC website, they hold steady to the lies that they had propagated over the decades.
Right. And then where you see the tie between the government and pharma and the CDC is that all of this was disclosed to the government. You know, there's a Congressman Posey, I believe.
Yes.
All the scientific data were handed over to him. He reviewed it and he showed it to his fellow congressmen and actually got up in front of the House of Representatives and told them all about this. And he was literally met with crickets, complete silence in the chamber. No House representative or senator. Well, I'm sure some of them have asked Representative Posey about this. Tell me more. This sounds interesting that the CDC would, researchers there would commit such falsehood in the research. Tell me more. Maybe we should investigate it. No. I'm not aware of any investigation that has occurred as a result of Thompson's whistleblower disclosure.
Right. Which speaks so to how
it stays quiet. You know, they hear something's going wrong and they just do nothing because I don't know why. Maybe because, you know, that's where all their money comes from, perhaps.
Perhaps.
To the link there.
Yeah, definitely. That shows how far back this goes, folks. That's 2 decades ago that this all transpired. And Houston, we got a problem. So I'm going to just 1 minute share my story, and then I'm going to throw the ball to you, Bob, to share it so we can just really quick bring people up to speed as how we got to where we are today. I think it's worth sharing that. So I was at Dartmouth Medical School, graduating in 1995. And went to pediatric residency, board certified pediatrician for 30 years. It was in the early 2000s, I started waking up to, hey, we've got a problem. Kids are not doing well. And then in 2004, 5, 6, and 7, each of those years, I had a kid regress from normal at age 1 to nonverbal autistic severe symptoms by age 2. And boy, I had already been doing some deep dive, attending Defeat Autism Now conferences that were very well run. It was the best science I'd ever seen. Better than anything I'd attended that was American Academy of Pediatrics, and became aware of the fact that there's plenty of science out there showing problems with the ingredients in vaccines. And over the years, we then started realizing there's problems with vaccines in general, triggering autoimmunity, immune activation, the toxins within vaccines, and that these were closely correlated with the ongoing rise of chronic pediatric conditions. So fast forward, I published the Vaccine Friendly Plan. Actually, the book I was going to write, which I ended up calling the Vaccine Friendly Plan, this man I'm interviewing today, Dr. Bob Sears, actually beat me to it by practically a decade. So right when I left my old group practice because they wouldn't allow me to vaccinate selectively, the vaccine book came out and it's a masterpiece. You should own it. And he's actually updated it with a COVID chapter. So, but I published in 2016. Yours was 2008, right, Bob?
Yeah, 2007. Yeah.
2007 for that first version. And I know you've got a 2022 update. So that's awesome. After publishing the Vaccine Friendly Plan, the medical board in Oregon, long story short, came after me incessantly. They asked that I prove that the Vaccine Friendly Plan was as safe as the CDC schedule. That was when we published the huge study, vaxxed, unvaxxed, of actual patients born into my practice. Every one of them, we looked at all health outcomes, something they don't do for vaccine research. And what we found was shocking to most. I suspected it was what we would find, but unvaccinated children are hands down healthier, have far less chronic disease, to the tune of 400 to 800% on most conditions we looked at. And these were allergies, autoimmunity, neurodevelopmental, behavioral issues. It didn't matter almost what we, infections. So that woke me up to what was going on. The interesting story to finish it up, and then it's tossing this to you, Bob. A few days after that was published online, the Oregon Medical Board emergently suspended my license. And interesting, I gave them the information they asked for and they responded by suspending my license. There's a whole lot more, but I'm going to leave it at that. That was sort of my journey in a nutshell. And Bob, I'd love to hear yours.
Well, I think my journey, Paul, started in 1993. My second and my third year of medical school at Georgetown, They started, the CDC declared, hey, we need to vaccinate every newborn baby against hepatitis B vaccine, the sexually transmitted infection. And I was like, well, that makes no sense at all. I'll just set that vaccine aside. I won't think much about it. But kind of made me think, huh, why would the CDC promote this so heavily? And are any other vaccines on their schedule? Maybe do they promote those in a way that isn't maybe the best decision for every newborn in the United States? So that was one step. But the second step, Paul, is when the FDA took the DTP vaccine off the market right around the same time, because they finally admitted that vaccine was causing severe brain injury. And you were practicing at this time as well. And they took it off the market. But when I did some more reading on that, I realized parents had been crying for help, telling the government their kids were being severely brain injured for like 15 and 20 years before this. It goes way, way back. And the medical community was covering it up. They were not admitting it. Everyone was staying silent about this possibility of brain injury from a vaccine. But when you look at the medical literature published in mainstream journals, it was very clear that there is a direct link between DTP vaccine and severe brain injury. And so that really disheartened me. I thought, how can my medical community know something's happening but continue a vaccine for so many years before they took it off the market? And so that is what made me start to question everything. So when I started practicing, Paul, in 1998, I thought, I'm not going to give every vaccine on the CDC schedule. I never have in my office. I'm only going to offer the vaccines that protect babies from diseases that could kill you. You know, severe disease like meningitis or whooping cough, you know, for young babies. Is pretty much limited to those two, vaccines. I thought maybe rotavirus is rarely, potentially fatal in babies. So I thought maybe that was a good idea. Maybe you eventually do an MMR vaccine down the road, but you skip a lot of the vaccines that are not necessary. So I was essentially what you said, selectively vaccinating my patients. And you know what, Paul? A mom came up to me at a conference about maybe about 10 years ago or so. And she said, hey, Dr. Bob, I love you. I appreciate you. I appreciate the book you wrote. And of course, I had written the vaccine book by then, that presented this selective, slowed down vaccine schedule. And she said, I was following your suggested selected vaccine schedule, and my child had a severe brain injury reaction to the one vaccine I gave him that day. And that hit me, Paul. That hit me, knowing that even someone who knew there was risk to vaccination was trying to be really careful and go and vaccinate even just one vaccine at a time, that there's still potential for a severe reaction. And my practice essentially morphed, probably throughout the 2000s to the early, 2010s, to basically it shifted from a whole bunch of patients selectively vaccinating to patients who didn't want any vaccines at all. And that became my practice, because every pediatrician in the area would kick these patients out.
Yeah.
And so they all by default ended up in my practice. In fact, most people that come to my practice don't even get vaccine advice from me. They don't even ask my advice. They've already decided they don't want to vaccinate and I'm the only one they can come see. So I welcome them with open arms. What I've learned, Paul, when I compare the 10 to 15 years of my practice where I was selectively vaccinating babies, and I compare the last 10 years where almost every patient does not vaccinate a baby at all, I have seen the same results that you have. I have not scientifically investigated the data and the statistics and the results, but all I know as a pediatrician is my office used to be filled with patients who had ear infections, pneumonias, sinus infections, allergies, eczema, chronic diarrhea, all kinds of illnesses and allergic problems that, today, Paul, in my office, with the 99% of babies not vaccinating, when it comes to the sick hour at the end of every day in my office, I'm kind of sitting back, twiddling my thumbs. No one's here.
I have to highlight. Yeah, I've got to highlight that for people. If you heard that correctly, it is true. I started my practice with, I built it with two waiting rooms side by side facing the station, because I came from a practice that was just packed with sick kids, ear infections, you know, 3 to 5 times a winter for most kids. And over that decade plus, I experienced exactly what you experienced. My sick waiting room was empty. My well waiting room was packed. We're rare in the pediatric community as far as having had this opportunity to witness how healthy unvaccinated kids are.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I like to explain to my patients my theory on why that is, because I feel like scientifically we don't really have enough, you know, objective, peer-reviewed, placebo-controlled research to really demonstrate for sure that this is true. But my theory, Paul, essentially stems down to me, not so much that vaccines are injuring a majority of kids that get them. What I do think they do is I think they might make your immune system less healthy. And then why would that even be? How would something that's designed to make your immune system stronger and healthier, how might it actually make your immune system less healthy? And it really comes down to the fact that every vaccine is completely artificial. There's nothing natural in vaccines, Paul, and you know this. I'm speaking to your audience. All the germ components they put in there are genetically modified or genetically engineered or crossbred or grown in a laboratory in a way that makes them very artificial. And then you add ingredients that cause a lot of inflammation in your immune system. You're essentially hitting your immune system with extremely artificial versions of these germs that cause a lot of inflammation. So the immunity you're creating is not natural. And it essentially, to me, revs up the allergic part of your immune system and revs up your immune system in such an artificial way that it no longer knows how to work very well in a natural way. When a simple cold comes along, or you get an ear infection, or you get some other infection that your body is supposed to try to fight off, it doesn't work as well because you've artificially stimulated it repeatedly, time and again, as a baby during the years when your immune system is supposed to be developing naturally. So that's why I feel like these kids may be a lot healthier if they grow up without vaccines, simply because you're letting their immune system grow in a healthy way and develop naturally without all of that artificial influence.
Yeah, no, I concur. And there's plenty of literature out there, folks, that shows that our approach of vaccinating, realize we are bypassing the body's natural exposure to pathogens, to organisms. Normally, we breathe in viruses and bacteria, or they come through our mouth, oral, GI tract, and our immune system in both the nasopharynx and the GI tract is right there, ready to recognize, respond, sort it out. And that sort of response develops a natural exposure like that develops both arms of your immune system, right? So there's that T-cell mediated that's local that keeps the infection from even taking hold in the body, which is why natural is so much better for you. And vaccines just focus on the B-cell, getting antibodies. And antibodies alone is not good immunity. And they wane over time, which is why the vaccinated immunity doesn't seem to last like natural immunity does. But yes, the inflammation that's triggered, autoimmunity. We saw with COVID. This is the interesting thing. I'd be real interested in your experience with COVID, just because, like I had, and I'm now retired, I don't diagnose or treat. I just inform. This is a good platform to share information. But you're still practicing, so you have this huge population of unvaxxed kids. How did they do with COVID?
You know, Paul, thankfully, not just my kids, but children all over the country have almost universally done just fine with COVID. You know, the published literature shows a fatality rate in children of about 1 in every 100,000 children in our country, which is great news. And my patients did the same. You know, I think I have a few patients that had to be in the hospital. You know, I didn't take care of them because I'm not a hospital pediatrician. Or they at least went to the emergency room. But, you know, for the most part, no one has died in my practice. In fact, no one has died in my practice in these 25 years from any infectious disease. Fortunately, I'm very blessed to be able to say that. Yeah. But our whole country, Paul, the children did great with COVID, except for that rare anomaly where there's that rare, very tragic fatality, which is such a minority of children when you look at the entire population. And but I would say, I think my patients do better with every cough and cold and flu and routine childhood illness that comes their way. Even when I see ear infections, a lot of them don't even need antibiotics because their immune system is so healthy, their body fights through it really well. You know, same true for sinus infections, bronchitis, even mild cases of pneumonia. A lot of these kids, they'll fight through it because their immune system is ready for it.
Yeah. Well, I would second your observation. I had the same observation. Not a single kid, to my knowledge, hospitalized for COVID. We had one hospitalized after they chose to go get the shot. A young teen got the COVID jab and ended up with myocarditis. First case I'd seen in my career. But our kids did really well with this. The parents were sometimes sicker, and occasionally you'll have a grandparent, right, that doesn't do well if you have a lot of underlying serious health conditions. The other little thing I would just throw out there with the data has been manipulated in the U.S. because you're not considered vaccinated until 2 weeks after your booster dose or your second dose. So a lot of the deaths caused by the COVID jabs themselves would be documented as unvaxxed deaths because they're not considered vaccinated until you've had your booster and you've waited 2 weeks. Most of the deaths happen in the first few days to a week after you get the shot. So that really messes up the data when kids, I think, have done even better than what the data says. That's certainly been our experience. This is really important, folks, to understand how amazing children's immune systems are. And I wanted to sort of wrap this session up with a question. You've alluded to it by how you're allowing people to practice in your current medical practice, which is really honoring informed consent and letting them do what they wish. But if you yourself had to vaccinate again today, what would you do and why?
Yeah, I remember the medical staff had to chase me around the room in medical school trying to get me to take the hepatitis B vaccine.
Yeah, I succumbed to that.
Yeah. We all have to do that as a doctor. But you know, what I would do today, Paul, if I was having more children today, I would probably raise them without vaccines. You know, knowing what I know now, you know, knowing what I've seen with my patients over the years, I would probably raise them vaccine free. And you know, say again, 99% of my patients do the same. And as a pediatrician, I'm able to see both sides of this because I do have some patients that want vaccines, and I do offer them in my office. And I, you know, I carefully give them after giving informed consent. I even tell patients nowadays, Paul. I used to say, okay, you can make your own decision. I'll just give you, objective, neutral, informed consent. But I actually tell them nowadays, I'm more upfront. I say, we can give you this vaccine. I want you to know that I'm not recommending it to you directly. I'm not advocating for this vaccine. I will give it to you, but it's not my recommendation that you do it. And so I feel like I'm very fairly giving patients, informed consent when they decide to vaccinate. And then we do it as carefully as we can, only against a disease that might be a really, really important, vaccine for them. And then we make sure there's no severe reactions before we proceed with any subsequent doses. But, I myself, when we wrote our books, Paul, people have accused my book and probably your book as well as being frustratingly objective. People just want to be told what to do. And I rarely used to tell people what to do, both in my book or even in the office. But now I do, Paul. Now I feel like in the sacred confines of the doctor's office, you're able to speak freely and offer patients objective and straightforward, balanced, informed consent. So I'm very happy to be able to do that.
Thank you, Dr. Bob Sears. Folks, the courage it takes to do what you just said you're doing is mind-blowing. And there are only a handful, to my knowledge, maybe there's a few more now after COVID, of pediatricians in the country willing to just speak the truth, willing to share all the information, not just take this pharma-driven protocols that come down from above. And and really allow parents to get good information. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm in awe of you. I've respected you from day one as soon as I knew about you and read your book. It's just incredible. And one last thought and we'll wrap it up. So the unvaccinated kids and the parents of these kids get blamed for, well, you're the reason we have all these diseases and you're not doing your part for society, right? I have a different take on that and I'm interested in yours. I found, as you did, the unvaxxed are so healthy that they aren't posing a risk to anybody. And if one of our unvaxxed kids got measles, we'd keep them home. But what's your take on that? That we're not doing, the unvaxxed are selfish.
Well, Paul, my take is that most vaccines don't actually even work by reducing the transmission of the illness. Most vaccines actually only work by making you, the individual, feel less sick or maybe have a less severe course of the illness. But most vaccines don't actually prevent you from catching the infection and becoming mildly symptomatic and contagious to others. So for the most part, Paul, it doesn't even matter whether you're vaccinated or not when it comes to the spread of illnesses. Now, you could spend all day talking about this. You know, the vaccines we know in particular that don't prevent transmission and the spread, for one, is whooping cough vaccine. That's why we have whooping cough everywhere, is the vaccine doesn't stop that spread. You know, we suspect the flu shot does not prevent transmission. We suspect the COVID vaccine does not prevent transmission. We know diphtheria vaccines back in the day did not prevent transmission. You know, you could argue, Paul, that the measles vaccine may actually prevent transmission. It might actually prevent you from catching the illness and you know keep you from spreading to others. But, you know, there's a lot of drawbacks to the MMR vaccine as well. You know, it's probably the vaccine with one of the worst lists of side effects. So I don't blame anybody for not getting an MMR vaccine, you know, to get measles protection. But I do ask my patients, you know, if you are not going to get an MMR vaccine for that artificial measles immunity, yeah, if you catch measles, you probably will do okay with the disease, since it has such a low fatality rate. But stay home, you know, be responsible and you know, stay home for the 10 to 14 days, especially if you are around anyone who, you know, who's part of a measles outbreak, or you travel to Europe and you get sick there and you come home with measles symptoms. You know, be responsible and stay home so that you can, everyone should stay home with measles, vaccinated or not vaccinated, so we can keep the outbreaks as low as possible.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you the last word because, I'm so grateful you came on the show. Just a sentence or two to parents and grandparents who are caring for kids out there. What's your most important message you'd like to leave with them?
Well, I hate to see division in our world and our society. And so many things divide us, especially politics and sometimes religion. And of course, you know, there's still racial inequality issues, Paul, that we're dealing with. I feel like I hate to see the vaccine issue divide anybody. And I see, you know, vaccinated families kick unvaccinated members out of the family or say, you can't come over for Christmas. Schools, you know, we're not going to admit you because you're not vaccinated. And governments are now discriminating against unvaccinated people. And the media are putting out stories that make it seem as if unvaccinated people are legitimate sources of discrimination, and that we are appropriate targets to shun out of society. And I hate to see that, Paul. I feel like knowing that vaccines, for the most part, don't prevent the spread of disease, we should all be able to be one people when it comes to your medical choices, vaccinated or unvaccinated. We should all get along and love each other. And so I like to try to promote peace, love, and understanding between two sides of this most divisive issue.
That's beautiful. Peace, love, and understanding, folks. Thanks for watching Pediatric Perspectives.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're enjoying our shows and our streams. We do need your help, though, to keep us on the air at CHDTV. It does cost money. And so if you can help, please donate to CHDTV so we can keep going. It's imperative that we do because of the censorship out there and the lies in the mainstream media. And we're trying to break that down, bring truth. We're learning every day, our team and hopefully you as well, about EMR and all the other issues that we have in this world today. So if you can, please keep us on the air. It's extremely important that we do keep going. We need to help these people who need a voice with their injuries from the vaccinations, so, or the shots or whatever it may be. So please do help us if you can. Much love from me, and thank you.
I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsandscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.